Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow the Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Robert Forto, and sitting beside me here in snowy Meadow Lakes, Alaska, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Actually, Walter is sitting next to you.
Walter is here too. Just about everybody is here at our good friend Dave Shear's place. Here on Scott Lake and Meadow Lakes. What's going on?
We're gearing up for Kobuk 440. So we fly out Monday morning at 2 in the morning. And we've just been here the last couple of days getting things organized, doing some runs. You can imagine traveling with two teams. Pat, can you put a shirt on, please, buddy? 24 dogs, that's a lot of logistics, you know, getting kennels together. My good buddy Ray Reddington's been helping out with that. We ran out of his place yesterday morning, went out to the Gnome Kennel Club, sign him back. Quite a bumpy trail. I don't think the trail's probably as bumpy today as it was yesterday, though, for some reason.
Yeah, a little bit of snow. You know, I ran on that trail just a couple of weeks ago. It was absolutely beautiful, and I think that was before we had a lot of the big melt. But here we are, snowing quite a bit here at Meadow Lakes. We're supposed to get maybe 14 inches in the Matthew Valley, so let's see what happens.
I know, and I've got to drive into Anchorage to go to a concert tonight. I'm going to probably give myself an extra half hour, you know, just
there you go.
Conditions. It's coming down good out there.
So also here in the house today, not only is Walter and Goldie was running around a little bit ago, but we also have Nicole and Mushing and Iditarod participant, as he likes to be known, Mr. Pat Moon. He was on our show last time. They are here as well. We've got a full house.
Yeah, don't forget Star, that stage.
We got to remember Star.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking before we went on air about doing a Hugh Neff roast. What do you think about that?
Ooh. I've already had breakfast. I think.
So you're getting ready to go on the Kobuk 440, the last race of the season. Tell our listeners a little bit about that. Right now you seem to have a worldwide listenership. I don't think a lot of people know about the Kobuk 440, so tell us a little about that one.
Starts up in Kotzebue and goes straight inland. Does a little bit of a loop, go to the village of Kobuk. The village is called Kiana, Ambler, Shugnak. And then you get up to Kobuk, which is in the interior, which really isn't that right over the mountain pass from Coldfoot, where I used to work. Then you're actually coming straight back to Kotzebue, but you go a different route, and you're going to be going through Selawik, which is pretty much like being on the moon. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and hardly anything dark. It's all whiteness out there.
Yeah.
Being on the moon. And I've done, you know, quite a few thousand milers, but I'll tell you what, I've learned more mushing-wise from the 440 than probably any other race, as far as just a lot of the greats of the sport that aren't known, but are, you know, Baker's one, John's one now. So he's known a lot more than he was, say, 5-10 years ago when I first went up there. So I used to go up there after the quest and learn from, you know, Ed Eaton, Louis Nelson, Jeff King goes up there a lot. And the thing about doing these smaller village races is you don't have the tons of media and 80 other dog teams. You only have, like, maybe 10 other teams. So you can actually spend a lot more time just watching these guys and learning from how they do things.
And it's quite an expensive race to get to, especially if you're not out that way. I know you talked about having 24 dogs. You got to fly yourself, your gear, and everything up there to Kotzebue. What's the expense to do something like that?
Oh, let's not talk about that. That depresses me.
Depresses you.
Oh, I usually figure $2,500 to $3,500, depending on what type of musher you are and how much overboard you like to go with stuff. But you have to imagine you have to have enough gear in case there's a storm. You might need extra food. I've done this race before where we're going to Norvik, which is the first village that you just sort of sign in and out of and blow through. And it was Sebastian Chanella's first year as well as Michelle Phillips. And basically they couldn't even see the trail until we almost got to Norvik, which is, you know, it was a 5-hour run, and it was just pure whiteout.
Wow.
And I've also seen people in this race that have gone snowblind from not having the proper eye gear. I mean, the snow up here is, the reflection of the sun off the snow is, you know, this girl had to actually go out and get rescued a couple of years ago. She didn't have the proper gear on.
So it's going to be here first and second week of April as we're going into the race. It starts next Thursday, is that right?
Yeah.
So you're heading out tomorrow night, 2 a.m. What's the temperature like? And I assume much more light compared to Iditarod Yukon Quest.
Yeah, it's probably going to be another it's interesting. It's probably going to be colder than the Iditarod.
Yeah.
From what I saw at the Iditarod this year, I think it's really warm.
Lights till 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it doesn't get pitch black. It's just like a little dusk, like gray. So you really save on batteries for your headlamp.
There you go. So you're also taking Pat Moon. He is Iditarod musher, has been in the race a couple of times. He is also from Chicago.
He's not just an Iditarod musher. He's a professional rickshaw racer.
Professional rickshaw racer. And I want him to talk about that a little bit. Pat Moon is on the air right now. Pat, how's it going?
Fabulous.
So tell us about that. I know you were on a couple of months ago before Hugh headed over to Sweden there. Tell us about that rickshaw race you did over in India.
It was a charity, money-raising charity for two wonderful organizations. One was the Frank Water for India, which brings fresh water into rural Indian communities, and the other one was the Neonatal Center in Aberdeen. Good friend and sponsor, Bill Sutherland. Grandson had some minor issues when he was born, and this was a great way to see India and raise a fair amount of money for the charities that we chose. Our race started in northern Indian Jaisalmer with a motorized tricycle, 6.5 horsepower, one-cylinder motor. And we drove from Jaisalmer, just pretty close to the Himalayas in Pakistan, down to Fort Cochin in southern India. So it took us 12 days, 28 minutes. We saw everything that India could throw at us, from elephants in the road to goats getting in our cart to a lot of Indians. And it was probably the second most memorable experience in my life. A little less difficult than the Iditarod, but a heck of a way to see India, that's for sure.
Did you go on any of those roads that they had on the Discovery Channel, the world's most dangerous roads, those ones where you're just kind of hanging off the side of a cliff?
We didn't go on any that were on the Discovery Channel, but we did go on roads that probably would rank as dumb.
So you better give a shout out to your partner in crime there from Scotland.
Yeah, Bill Sutherland, who was I met through Waddy McDonald, Iditarod finisher, not participant like myself. Bill is probably realistically the nicest human being on the face of the earth. He is in for anything, charitably minded, will help out with anybody, spends a lot of his time working at a kind of a resale shop in Scotland, has invited Hugh and I over there numerous times, puts us up, takes care of us. It's just an all-around, you know, one of the great things about mushing that I've experienced in the 8 years that I've been doing it is you meet the nicest people, whether it be in a village, whether it be at races, whether it be people that Facebook you with well wishes. Luckily, I struck up a friendship with Bill. He was dumb enough to think that I'm kind of an interesting character. Bill's just the nicest person on the planet. I can hands down say that. Just would give you the shirt off his back and then ask you what size pants you wear.
But would he give you the last drop of wine in the bottle?
No. It stops at the wine consumption. He will in vain and make a passing, would you like a glass of wine, with really no intentions of giving it to you.
But I would definitely in the future, within the year, hopefully, like to go up there and visit him and Mr. Stewart and all the guys up in that area of the UK. There, you know, there's a pretty good mushing scene up there, and they're doing they're doing racing by carts up there.
Oh, yeah. And I know that Waddy said he's going to make it down, hopefully, this coming year for Iditarod. But before we get into more of the Kobach. I got to ask you, Pat. You were on our show a couple of months ago. You just ran the UP 200 with another guy's teams, and now here you are sitting in Meadow Lakes, Alaska, wearing a Hugh Neff Gypsy Musher shirt right now. And you said
it's clean.
And it is. And you said
it's
on the
not my shirt. It's a shirt that he.
I see. But you said on that show that you don't own any dogs of your own. You live very close to the airport in Chicago, but you're going to be running one of Hugh's teams in the Kobach 440. How did that whole relationship come about? How did you end up here in Alaska with Hugh?
On my first attempt in 2010, Hugh came over and introduced himself. And being from Chicago, there's two of us that run dogs that up here, or
three more. We got Charlie.
Yeah, three now. Charlie and Charlie Benjamin. So Hugh came over and kind of introduced himself, and I we tried to find talking events for Hugh's school tour down there, and he stayed at our house. And like I just said, the mushroom world is unique in knowing people and talking about people. And when there's a common interest in anything in life, whether it be cars or racing or religion, you find things to talk about, and you like to hang out with like-minded people. And you and I are like-minded people. We both love dogs. One of the reasons that I was drawn to Hugh and to help kind of Hugh out run this team is Hugh's philosophy with dog care lines up pretty close to mine. And you know, Jake Berkowitz is the same way, where dogs come first no matter what's going on. We got in, I don't know what day it was this week, and it was late, and we were both tired. I know I was tired, but the option of eating and the option of going to bed doesn't come into focus until the dogs are fed, the dogs are bedded down, the dogs have straw. So I try to align myself, although I don't own any dogs, I try to align myself with kennels and operations that hold those same ideals and, the concept the dogs come first. And I'm sure there's a lot of kennels out there that do it, but Hugh is vocal about that. And that's what, I don't want to say allows me, but that's what makes it that I want to be affiliated with Hugh, with the dog care.
So you're going to be running Hugh's B team, puppy team, what is it?
Okay. I'm going to say it's an A-minus
team. A-minus team.
I got a lot of Hugh's Quest veterans. We've borrowed a couple of amazing dogs from Ray. I will be running Walter, 2012 Golden Harness winner from
my
the
first race
Quest.
Racing against Walter.
Wow.
It
could be interesting.
On the training run yesterday, we left a little before Hugh. Hugh caught us. We chatted with Hugh briefly. And then Hugh left us in the dust.
Yeah, but you guys had two people in the sled.
We did. We were running. Nicole was helping out yesterday, and I was ballast for a little while. But it's going to be an interesting race. I'm definitely not running to win it. I'm running to see a different part of the world. And I do have some younger dogs that haven't seen that trail yet. So I'm hoping that I can.
Man, I got a whole team that hasn't seen the trail.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I can help Hugh out by introducing those dogs to the trail in a nice, safe environment. My goal for the race is to finish, obviously, but finish with a dog team that we can take out the next day on a short run, and they're going to be happy to run.
So yeah. There's so much competition this year that I think all mushers are silly to think that they're a step ahead of all the other people in this field, you know.
So Pat, my last question for you. You said you participated in the Iditarod twice and had to scratch both times. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Have you been to this part of the country out that way, Kobach and that area of Alaska?
Not up in Kotzebue. I've been on the coast. I worked for Mitty Johnson last year down in Unalakleet. So I've seen the coast. I've been introduced to the coastal climates and the wind. I've never been north, that far north, so that is a draw. You know, part of mushing is getting to see different parts of the world and seeing it. Tourists in Alaska see what they're supposed to see on a cruise or the big cities. I'm lucky enough to be affiliated with some organizations and kennels where not only do I get to see parts of Alaska that most people don't get to see, I get to see him by dog team traveling at 8.5 miles an hour. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't. Pat Moon is our guest today here on the Gypsy Musher. Do you have a website?
Sounds like he's the host to me.
I know. Do you have a website, Facebook, anything that people can follow?
Well, yeah.
Chicago?
I'm on Facebook. It's just Pat Moon. I'm running for Hugh. And
I mean to the moon.
So probably the website that people should go to is follow me is Facebook, obviously. But the Kobuk, we're going to have trackers, kobuk440.com. But Hugh's dogs deserve the credit. So it's probably just laughingeyeskennel.com.
What's up with all these people in Wasilla that are addicted to watching Dexter every night on TV?
Yeah.
I've noticed since we've been in holidays.
I've never seen Dexter.
It's all about serial killers.
Oh,
yeah.
Probably
there's a lot of Dexter fans here in Wasilla.
Yeah, we're over at Shear's neighbors last night having some buffalo dinner. And
scrumptious. Thank you, Tammy.
It was Dexter madness.
Dexter madness. So thanks a lot, Pat. I know you got some stuff to do with your dogs and all that, so we'll let you go. We'll talk again, hopefully, after the race. So, Hugh, we have a couple more people here. You want to invite anybody else on?
Well, it looks like she's busy trying to drum up business for me, but Nicole's actually going to be kind enough to come out to Costco with Pat and myself and keep us in line. And what else did you say, honey?
Nicole, come on up.
You're going to booty all the dogs, harnesses.
There you go. So Nicole has been a huge help to the Laughing Eyes crew for the last few years, and she and I've hung out a few times. Excellent little musher herself, aren't you there, Nicole?
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. So we'll have her on again. I guess she's doing her thing like everybody else here in the house. Look at Dave over there. You know, Dave Shear, we had him on a couple of months ago, old school musher. Dave Shear.
Did he just call you old Dave?
Old school musher.
We've decided we're calling Dave the Sam Malone of mushers.
There we go. So let's bring Dave up here for just a second, then we're going to get back to the Kobuk. Dave Shear, Iditarod and Yukon Quest finisher back in the day. Tell his folks a little bit about yourself there, Dave.
Oh, let's see. I had a dog kennel for almost 20 years. Back in 84 is when I ran the first Iditarod, so it was a few years ago. And
who won that year, Dave?
Dean Osmar won that year.
Dean Osmar. The name sounds familiar.
It does.
Yeah. And actually, that was, I ended up meeting him, and he had a commercial fishing operation, and I went down and I fished with him that following year. And I decided that's what I wanted to do. So in 1987, I got my first fishing permit, commercial salmon permit, and that allowed me to work in the summer and drive dogs all winter.
So here's a good one for you, and I was looking at a picture of Dave's, and I'm like, boy, that's a mighty big trophy over there you have, Dave. How did you get that trophy? And that's actually a race that Dean Osmar started, right?
Yeah, the Clam Gulch Classic, yeah, that's what we call it, and that's what he called it, and it's a traveling trophy, so you just...
Similar to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. But everybody thought that he got the trophy so big because he didn't think anybody was going to be able to beat him.
Right. So Dave, you've been out of mushing for quite a while now. You're now a realtor here in Meadow Lakes. That's actually how you and I met. You sold me my house. And, you know, every time I come over, you're doing something with the dogs. I'm looking out here right now. You have 24 dogs out in your yard. I thought you got out of this crazy sport.
The ducks and geese need company.
Yeah, I know. I like having animals around. I wish I had a little bit more property, but he's always welcome here. And
yeah, we're going to get Dave into one of these races one of these years.
There you go. Yeah. So, Dave, one last thing. Coming up next month, you're going to do something new here in Wasilla. What is that with the fish?
I've got a new venture going, and it's called the Salmon Grill. And it's a mobile vending trailer, and then we're going to serve seafood on the grill. And salmon is our main product. So we're going to offer the locals and the tourists that come by a great salmon dinner.
There you go. The Salmon Grill is going to be right next to the Fred Meyers on the Park Highway. And it's going to be like no other of these coffee shacks here in Alaska.
This dude loves to cook.
This dude loves to cook. Even
when you're not hungry, he's going to make it.
Yeah. You want something to eat? Dave. So that's going to be open before long. We'll let people know about that later on. Dave, thanks a lot, and thanks for hosting Hugh, as always. So with Hugh. So, Hugh, let's get back into the that's what happens, Hugh, when you release the phone number.
That's America.
That is America. So, Hugh, Kobuk.
Such an educated people.
the Kobuk 440 is happening next week. What's happening after that? You got the school tour coming up towards the end of the month. What's going on after that?
Well, actually, before that, you know, the funny thing about the world is, you know, a lot of people, when you get a name for yourself, you're doing well, they try to bring you down, or they, you know, try to dissect you, and it's just the narcissist way of the media, and just, I think everybody in the world thinks they're the media now. So I'm actually trying to do good with the position I've evolved into, and right after the 440, we're going up to Fort Wainwright, and we're actually going to be bringing the dogs, and we're going to be helping out a group of soldiers, you know, that have had some tough times coming back from the war, not really feeling like they are still trying to find themselves. And so for me, and I can't live with humans. You just saw these people just called in here. I'm afraid of people. That's why I love dogs. And so I like to use my dogs to perhaps help out other people with issues. And so we've have some friends through Fort Wainwright, and we're going to be doing this for the long-term future. And hopefully, you know, next winter we'll be able to get some of the soldiers rides and stuff. But the more I've done this, you know, and the more you see of the world, the more you realize how lucky you are to do what you do. And that's why I have much more than anybody in the world, is because I am taking advantage of the opportunity. A lot of these kids, I think, that are born into mushing families or that are have parents that are famous mushers, they don't realize how lucky they are to have a dog yard and be able to go out in the woods and play with a bunch of animals every day.
You know, you said that you're going to give rides to some of those soldiers. You know, a lot of people, they get really hooked on mushing once they do something like that. And I know a lot of soldiers, they've been in some of the worst conditions in the world, but just to get out there and explore Alaska on a dog team, that's a different experience for a lot of those guys. You know, a lot of those guys grew up in different parts of the country. They come to Alaska and are stationed at Fort Wainwright or whatever, and they very seldom seen snow growing up.
Well, I look at, you know, military and large percentage of the military per state live in Alaska. When I came up here in 95, those are the guys that took care of me. I came up to Alaska, I had maybe a couple hundred bucks in my name. I was hitching rides to get to races. I remember being at races like the fire plug, and there'd be all these fancy dog trucks in the parking lot, and then there'd be me with my team in the corner. I didn't have a truck. I was getting rides from friends, and Rich Dorn was the guy that helped me out. I actually helped him build his house, and he gave me a place to stay. And then my buddy Ray Fox down in Indiana was another guy that helped me out through, you know, my tougher years. So I'm just trying to get back to those that have helped me in the past. And these guys, you know, they're like me. I go into any city anywhere in the world, and I'm like an hour or two into it, I need to get back out in the woods.
There you go.
So I appreciate cities for the good that they offer humanity, but for a lot of us, we need to be in the woods just for our sense of peace.
Well, that's cool. I look forward to hearing more about that that deal you're doing with the soldiers there at Fort Wainwright. For folks that are listening outside, Fort Wainwright is the big Army base located in Fairbanks, Alaska, about 2 hours from Tope, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there, 2.5 to 3, depending on weather conditions and how I'm driving.
There you go.
I'm in a hurry or not.
So right around April 30th or so, you guys are flying back down south to do your annual, your biannual school tour.
Somebody told me biannual means every other year, so the word I'm looking for is what you do twice a year.
Twice a year, whatever that word is. I'm not sure. I thought it was biannual as well, but maybe that is every other year.
Pat Moon, you're the one who said biannual meant every 2 years. All right.
So,
be a Chicago thing.
Must be a Chicago thing. So you're heading down there towards the end of the month.
Doing it a little bit different this year. I've got like 14 talks already set up in the Boston area in Mass. So I'm actually, instead of going to Chicago like I usually do, I'm actually going to be flying straight to Boston. Then sort of backtracking, doing a bunch of shows in New York. I'm trying to schedule a couple shows in Maine. So I've never been there. Nicole explained to me it's a little bit of a hike, but I've always... There's only Maine and Vermont are the two states that I haven't been to out of all of them.
Wow. Yeah, that is a beautiful area of the country, no matter if you're in Boston.
And then I have to go south because, you know, I was born in Chattanooga, and it's just something about the south that I love. Every school tour, I love going everywhere and visiting, you know, and spreading the word about dogs and dog mushing, but going down south, I just like it down there.
You know, you and I met that way on one of those school tours way back 2008.
Yeah. Yeah, with my buddy Tim. We were lost. Remember, we showed up a little bit late, and you had to sort of take over the reins.
And my wife took over, and you've got to know Michelle pretty well, but she was directing traffic over the phone saying, you need to get here. These kids are waiting.
Well, you know, marshers, we only get lost when we're on a highway somewhere.
There you go. So the school tour is going to last till when? How long is it going to be?
Till the end of the month.
Till the end of May.
So, yeah, we're going to be going through Carolinas, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, maybe do a show if we can around the Georgia area, and then wrap it up. We'll come back through Ohio and then finish off in Chicago. And I always have to head up and see my good buddies up in Wisconsin, Steve and Mike, and these are the guys that I grew up, and we're Boy Scouts. We've known each other since we were 5 years old.
Wow.
And our whole pack is still together, which, you know, how guys go, it's pretty tough for dudes to stay together with their buddies their whole lives. So I really cherish their friendship.
You've met people all over the world now. Just recently back from Sweden, Norway. Have you settled back down? I know that's kind of not in your nature. You're more of a traveling man. That's why we call it the Gypsy Musher. I mean, how many nights in the last 6-8 months have you slept in your own bed?
6-8 months. I don't know about that long, but yeah, in the last month and a half, probably just a few times. But you know me, it's hard for me to even sleep at all.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to get 4 or 5 hours and I'm up and at it. Like a buddy of mine named Lance once told me, plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. So
there you go.
I think, you know, when you have a passion for life, you're not feeling bad for yourself. You're getting ready to go out there and do it again. That's why I think people wonder why all of these mushers are doing these races year after year. For a lot of them, it's all about, I got to win. But for a lot of us, it's all about, I know I can do better. And that's why I keep on doing these races, because I'm like, I could do better than that. And that was the fun part about going and doing Finnmark, was to actually be racing not only different trails, but with different dog team for each race. So I got to be like a little bit of an experimenter and a teacher and racer all at the same time.
And you did quite well over there.
Yeah. Well, that had a lot to do with having good friends with decent dogs. But it also had something to do with maybe slowing it down a little bit. The more I watch of mushing, the more you realize that the people that are the most patient usually do the best. I mean, yeah, it's like Mitch Seavey's always saying, you need to get in the mix, but patience is a major component as well.
So let's go back to, full circle, back to the Kobuk 440 flying out tomorrow. We're going to be on the trail on Thursdays. What is the time frame for that, a 440? How long should that take a musher to complete, you know, at least if everything's going well?
Depends on the musher, but usually we finish up on Sunday morning, and then they have the banquet on Monday, and then we fly back Tuesday morning. But it all depends on weather conditions. I've done races, this race where it's been blizzards, and I've done this race where it's been close to 55 above. I remember going by Jeff King once, and he was camped out on the side of a hill, and he had his like pants rolled up and his shoes off, and he was actually catching rays. It was a warm up.
That's awesome to be able to.
That's when you need a lot of patience, because when it's bad weather, you shouldn't be moving.
You're going 2 or 3 miles an hour and stopping.
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, school tour coming up towards the beginning of summer. What's happening during the rest of the off season for you? Anything planned?
I'll be traveling with Hobo Jim in September. But as far as the summer goes, they have a few things up in the air, possibly going back and doing some tourism stuff. Norway and Sweden, I've been asked by some folks to perhaps promote some of their different companies. And then we'll have to play by ear from there. But what I'd really like to do, considering my great distant relatives are from the area, is I've been hoping for years now to go to the New Orleans area and do some dog tour or some school tours. So we'll see how that goes. But my little nephew is getting married, Andrew, and I'll be going to his wedding. So that's in Florida in August. But realistically, I'm all about having people come visit me. I'll have my tourism going at the house, and I've got what I consider to be the best dog yard in the world right now. And they're not even dogs that I'm racing yet. They're all young. They're all 2-year-olds, but they're all combinations of pretty much Hugh Neff, John Baker, and Hans Gott dogs. And they're, like, pretty phenomenal. There's a few of them that I got in this team. You like Bodie types, you know? Bodie's my main breeding dog.
He's a big boy now. I met up with him about this time last year when I was out at your place for about a month. He's really filled out to be a pretty big dog. You know, Pat mentioned it just a second ago about some of the dogs he's running. He's going to be running the famous Walter in lead.
Yeah.
Who are some of the dogs that you're taking with? You know, on this show, we always like to talk about the dogs. Who are you running in particular that folks may know or follow on your team?
I've got three dogs from Ray Reddington's team that I let him borrow, Havana, Mojito, and Bodie, and they all made it to Nome with Ray, and he had a real good run. And then, of course, Jewel and George will be leading the way, and then I've got a few other dogs that Ray's let me try out, and then basically my team is like a supersonic team. Like, I'm just going to be holding on for dear life if I can keep their energy together, which is, we'll see how the weather is. But lots of speed, where Pat has more of the muscly team. So if it's a rough, tough trail, Pat will probably leave me in the dust. He's got half his team that's done this race before.
Wow.
Mine are all fairly much rookies. But in racing, you know, oftentimes not being in the lead during the race is the best thing for you. And I've learned that. Believe me, I knew the whole time that Alan was going to beat me in the quest because I led most of the time. And when you lead most of the time, you don't win these races because all you're doing is breaking trail for the other guy, and he's usually on his sled drag pretending like he's going slower than you, and he's actually, or she is, using you, and they're just behind you letting you do all the dirty work.
And the dog team behind you is rearing to go to catch you. I mean, their nature. The nature of a dog team is to catch the team in front. So they're it's almost like, kind of like NASCAR. They're drafting off you, so to speak.
It's like a psychological draft, because then that team that passes, maybe if it's heat of the day, or
they flow right back down.
Yeah, they'll look back like, wait, now who do we choose?
Exactly.
That's why the stellar teams have that one amazing leader. And that's why most mushers, and a lot of them do, but not enough of them, I think, are not racing enough. Because the more you get your team in all these races, the better you're going to do the following year, or maybe 2 years down the road. So just because you have a bad first year, and these newer mushers really have to learn this, your dogs are learning just like you are. So any newer race that you do, I think that it behooves you to just travel and have fun and maybe, you know, push them a little bit more towards the end of the race. But as a newer musher, with all the experience in mushing, it's pretty tough sport to break into.
It is. Break in and win, I guess.
Yeah, or be competitive, and it's just going to get tougher through time. There's a reason why all the top people who do really well in the Iditarod also are fairly wealthy mushers. They can put a lot of money and energy into this. That being said, I couldn't afford to do the Iditarod this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're over there doing your thing in Sweden and Norway. So my last question to you, Hugh, last year, pretty much the first race of the season, at least in Alaskan mushing standards, was the Top of the World 350, since the Sheep Mountain 150 was canceled because of lack of snow. What's happening for that race next year? Is it going to go on? I know it's pretty early to think about that, but what's the future of the Top of the World?
I really want to race it next year. And I, unfortunately, I don't know what's going on with Lance, but I told him at the end of that thing, I said, I hope to see you back here next year because I'll have a team here ready to race because, you know, you want to see what you're all about, too, on this trail. And I've actually traveled on it a lot. So I figured, you know, I've got the ball rolling here organizing the race. I definitely think it could be one of the top three or four premier mid-distance events with lots of, you know, community backing and a larger purse and all that. I'm not necessarily one of these mushers that thinks a race has to have a big purse to be a big event, though. I think race fans and mushers really need to realize that there is no race that's greater or better than any other race. We have to realize that every race is great and amazing in its own right. And I think what I would always been pushing for is to have these races in a point system. I think it'd be neat for mushers to...
Similar to the way they do it in ISDRA, where you get the points for the medals.
You wish these races would all get together and think this out, because I think it'd be better for the health of the sport in the long run.
Right.
And have some end-of-the-year prizes or whatever.
And, you know, I think you would win that hands down, because at least in current ISDRA standards, you have to run, I believe it's eight races, and three of those have to be in a different country. So I think you would be the winner in points automatically. You're one of the few mushers that that travels to other countries, whether it just be our neighboring Canada or like you're going to Sweden and Australia and everywhere. You know, you've raced all over the place in the last 12 months. Tell us real quickly, we have about 5 minutes, some of the races that you've taken part in since this time last year. You know, some of those races in Australia, some of those races in other places. You've seen a lot of the world in the last 12 months.
Oh, yeah, man. I was at the McIntyres racing on their little course in their backyard, which ain't that little. It's probably about a 5-miler. That's where I wiped out with those Malamutes. I don't know if you ever saw that picture.
You told us about it.
Yeah, that was kart racing. And then, of course, you know, Canada, you got the Quest and other Percy DeWolf I've done. Heck, I've run dogs on a sled, an old Boy Scout sled back in Chicago back in the day. When I was in high school, we had some Labradors, so I decided to hook them up just to see what would happen. Didn't go too well.
Of course not.
Thankfully, there was a police officer there that caught the team, though.
Can you imagine running a team of dogs like Dave Shear's Star on a 100-miler? Just with her energy and her exuberance, trying to get down the trail, jumping up and down and bouncing.
Yeah, especially if there's a rabbit
or
whatever. But, you know... the race I'm definitely going back to, without question, is the Finnmark. I mean, I still can't get over the fact that I'm the first Alaskan musher to do this. After all these years the race has been going on, the great, great mushers over there, Ruger, Dahl, they call him Mr. Finnmark Slopet. That's who I stayed with. He's done like 22 of them, I believe. Old police officer, not old, but retired police officer. Used to run German Shepherds.
Wow.
They're better for recreational use than to race with. But he had a beautiful, beautiful yard. And then I got to meet, like, the thing about mushing, wherever you are in the world, everybody thinks they have the best mushers, whether it's Swenson or Mackey or whatever. But
best dogs or best mushers?
But every part of the world has amazing mushers that, you know.
Nobody knows anything about.
Like Sven Engholm. Amazing guy. I met him at the Samis, which is a type of native up there. They own the reindeer. The day before I left, and it was a real honor to meet this guy because he's won like 12 of them, I think.
Wow.
He's like, you know, somebody that Robert Sorley looks up to. And it was like being with one of the best ever. You could tell this guy had a special glow about him. But he wasn't a boisterous guy. He didn't want to be on camera. He's very shy. Fella, maybe in his early 60s, late 50s, but you can tell he had like a special, whisper type of magnetism about the guy. And I've heard a lot of stories about Sven Engholm, and he came over here and he had a really tough first Iditarod, but he did well. He's rookie of the year, and he did, top 10, top 15 in the other races. So the interesting thing about mushers back in Dave Shear's day is they're all a lot taller men, you know, and it's funny to see the evolvement of mushers as mushers are shrinking.
Back to the cephala line.
Yeah, everybody's going to be full circle.
Yes, everybody's going to be almost short enough to hang over the handlebar there.
Yeah, mushers are going to start like looking for another musher to marry so they can make the perfect musher.
There you go. So, you know, two other places where you haven't gone, I don't know if you've even thought about it, would be Russia and South Africa. Big time.
Or, you know, Argentina. Mark Nordman, you know, head of the Iditarod's, traveled more than anybody, really. And he's been to all the races, and he tells me stories about what it's like down there. And obviously, Russia, I'd love to go to. High on my list, the one place out of all other places I'd love to run dogs, which isn't allowed anymore, obviously, is Antarctica.
Oh, wow.
And that's sort of tough. But for some reason, they pretty much banned all animals because they don't want them to affect the species down there, but realistically, without dogs, I don't think humans would be down there in the first place.
That's exactly right. So Hugh, we're just about out of time here. Any parting words before you head on over to Kotzebue?
I'm just looking forward to seeing all my friends out in Kotz and the surrounding villages. For all you teachers out there, I still have some available dates open. You can contact me, laughingeyeskennel@hotmail.com. And really looking forward to the school tour. We've got lots of amazing stories this year, not only about the Quest and Iditarod, but just about places we visited on our tour of Scandinavia. Nothing like running dogs and having a bunch of reindeer run past you.
Very cool. Hugh Neff, guys, hughneff.com, and follow him on Facebook, Hugh Neff Gypsy Musher, as well as his own page, Hugh Neff. I think he's at his friend limit, but if not, you can always head on over to some of his pages. They'll pop up if you type in his name. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.